Welcome to Investor Talk Radio, hosted by Kurt Davis. During the show, Kurt will share tips and strategies as well as guest interviews on how you can become a successful real estate investor. Kurt Davis was a former chef for 11 years until one day had the opportunity to take a leap of faith, left cooking, and became a full-time real estate investor. Kurt has been building his personal portfolio of rental property and at the same time has helped over 500 investors around the globe purchase cash-flowing rental properties. He is a licensed realtor who has achieved multi-million dollar club status, and he is also very active in the local real estate investment club. And now, here is your host, Kurt Davis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Investor Talk Radio. I am your host, Kurt Davis, and today joining me in the studio is Krisha Rounds. Krisha, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kurt.
Now, listen, we've got a lot of questions that I'm going to drill you with here today, so I hope you're ready.
Great, I am ready. Very excited.
Good. Now, before we really kind of get into what you're doing with real estate and things like that, why don't you just kind of tell us all a little bit about yourself?
Okay, great. Well, I am originally from Memphis, Tennessee, and born and raised here. So, of course, for me, obviously, investing here in Memphis, right in my hometown, is very suiting or fitting for me. I've been here all of my life. My family is here, so it's a wonderful city. I do love Memphis. I actually was originally employed in the IT or information technology field. I worked in that field right out of college, and I would say I spent a good 12 to 13 years doing that before I decided to move forward and select real estate investing as my full-time day position.
Now, when you were working full-time in the IT business, how did you get involved in real estate? How did you first hear about it? Do you remember that?
Absolutely. It was definitely something that I always was interested in doing from back in like 2002, I believe. I had an interest to actually go out and acquire my real estate license, and I did at that time, but I actually allowed it to expire or go away at that time because I don't believe it was the right time for me. I think in my particular investment story. But later on, when the housing boom was going, I would say 2006 or so, was when you would see all of the HGTV shows and DIY network, and all of the information on flip this house and flip that house and everything.
Who was your favorite flip this house episode? Was it Armando?
I loved Armando, and then also the other team that was the guy and the lady. I can't remember.
Was it like South Carolina?
Yes.
I think his last name was Davis.
Yes, it was.
I liked him too.
I really liked that one. That was, I think, the first one I started to watch. They were before Armando. And so, yes, that was so exciting to me. I was thinking, gosh, if I could just flip a few properties. Of course, they make it seem so easy
And the profits seem to be unrealistic
absolutely.
At the same time.
Absolutely. But, I mean, I knew deep down inside that it was absolutely, you know, real estate investing is 100% something that will allow anyone to build wealth for the future. So I figured I want to get my hands in it. So that was kind of where my interest was sparked. So finally, by 2008, that's when I went and dived in and purchased my first investment.
So it was kind of the TV show stuff that you started seeing that was really kind of really piqued your interest about real estate investing.
Yes, absolutely.
What was it that made you start? Like you said, you just were watching the shows and everything like that. You were working full time in IT.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes. Then what? Okay, great. You're watching the show, but right. What next?
I would say at that time, even watching the shows in 2006 and 7, I would actually look online, you know, Realtor.com and different websites to just see if I found any deals that piqued my interest. But I think at that time, I still wasn't really ready to act. And I felt that although I had the interest, of course, there's always that bit of stage fright where you don't want to just jump right in. But I think in 2008, I actually did, I was introduced to somewhat like another investor in the city who kind of acted somewhat like a mentor for me. So it was basically a situation where he had already gone in and renovated the property. So all of that work was done. So I was able to basically get the house under owner financing, and I was actually able to purchase my first one. So after, I would say, I think after about 6 months or so in, then I was able to go ahead and refinance it and get a traditional loan on that. So that was kind of my first one.
So you purchased it cash?
Yes. Well, yeah, owner financing, okay. Cash, and then it was a, yeah, refinance after that.
Mm-hmm. So if I get this all straight, you've been involved in real estate investing and buying your first property since around 2008.
Okay,
yes. Great. Like I said, that kind of answers one of my questions. When did you get to a point where real estate became a full-time vehicle for you and you were able to leave the corporate world?
That was actually just in 2013, so about a year ago. It obviously took some time and some effort and some planning just to make sure that I was in the right position and ensuring that it was a field that I was passionate enough about so that I knew that I would stick with it, you know, no matter what. And I think that's the thing. It was just more of a journey for me to make sure that it was the field that I wanted to be in and that I would leave, obviously, IT, which was something that had been my career path for years.
Well, I don't mean to interrupt here, but what I want to ask you, because this is a question that mm-hmm. I see a lot of people asking on a lot of real estate forums, mm-hmm. is, you know, it's the typical, hey, I want to get involved in real estate investing so I can do yada, 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 and then I want to be able to leave my job. Or mm-hmm. it'll be something along those lines, like mm-hmm. you can tell people want to leave their job because
yes.
they're not happy. So
absolutely.
When you just kind of said you had to make sure that you were at, you know, kind of in the right place,
position, right.
What does that mean? Or what did that mean to you?
Well, for me, it definitely meant that I needed to obviously have a strong enough cash position to where you have at least, you know, so much living expense. I would say a minimum of 6 to 12 months a living expense just to cover any bad issues that may come up. Then with my primary investing strategy, of course, you have owning rental property, you always have maintenance and things like that that come up, and you never know when you may have to do a major repair. So for me, I knew I needed to have a specific threshold or amount that I had liquid, so that if I had any repairs that I needed to do, I would feel safe that I could, you know, dip into that. And then also, of course, the monthly income. For me, I actually was in a pretty good position in the corporate world, so I can't say that I absolutely replaced my salary that I was making there, but I tried to get as close to what I knew I needed to earn on a monthly basis from my monthly cash flow so that I could pretty much cover that income, plus also be able to continue to set aside so that I can continue to grow my business.
Now, when you made the decision to leave, did you hate your job, or were you more, I want to step away from my full-time IT position so I can really build my future and my real estate portfolio? Because I know some people really hate their
right.
jobs, but then I know that there's some people that truly love your job. Do you feel that you could have continued to stay employed full-time in the IT while doing this?
I believe I could have. I do believe I could have continued, but I believe the amount, like you said, the amount of growth that I wanted to experience, I felt it would have been difficult to continue on with that and work full time, because I did both for about 5 years. And for me, it was once I got to, I believe, my seventh rental property, I, of course, do manage them myself. I guess we'll talk about that, mm-hmm. you know, in more detail maybe later. But I felt that there was a balance that I was missing after I got to a certain number, because I felt like it did. It can take a lot of work when you're actually doing the rehabs yourself. So like I mentioned, the very first property I purchased from another investor in town, it was already rehabbed for me. But by the time I got to my second, third property, and so on, I was basically doing all the rehabs myself.
Project manager and
yes,
all.
Yes, exactly. So, so that did kind of get to a point where it was hard to manage it, and, you know, then to also try to balance family life. And I just, you know, I think one thing that you always hear, there's a such thing as making sure that if you do the thing that you're passionate about or do the thing that you love, you never work another day in your life. And I, after a few years, I noticed the difference. I noticed the difference between the way I felt doing IT versus the way I felt with real estate. So quite honestly, no, I did not hate my job. It wasn't a case where I hated it. I think, you know, it was a very rewarding position. And again, it was what I studied in college, my undergraduate degree and everything. But I was obviously more passionate about real estate.
Now, and it kind of, you kind of touched on when you started doing your second and third and so on properties. How many rental properties do you actually own?
I own 10 at this time.
Now, what I want to take a second here to say, I think, is so fascinating, because what you've been able to do in relatively, call it, 6 years, mm-hmm. and, you know, you were working full-time really up until about, you know, call it a year ago. Mm-hmm. It kind of sounds like you're in a position where just about everybody hopes to make it to. It's got to feel pretty good.
It does feel pretty good. It does. But I think the biggest thing is just, you know, continuing with, you know, if you have a dream, you just continue to set small milestones or goals, mini goals, and then you just continue to work towards them. And then one day you'll be able to actually reach it. And of course, don't get me wrong, there were bumps along the way. There were times when I wasn't sure exactly, you know, how things would exactly work out. But I think in the end, it's been very rewarding. And like you said, I'm very proud to say that, you know, I was able to make that accomplishment, because that was a very important goal for me. And like you said, everyone who gets into real estate, that's not their end goal. I think it depends.
It's just a vehicle.
Right, exactly.
Now, you know, I was going to ask you if you self-manage or if you use a property management company, but you did kind of make mention that you self-manage your own properties. Now, you manage 10 properties of your own. What's that like for you?
I would say it can be challenging from time to time. It's also rewarding, though, because I do feel that it keeps me in the loop, and it's, for me, I feel that I'm able to serve the communities that I own properties in a way. It's not just as if I'm just sitting back as a, you know, landlord just collecting the rent checks over time. In this case, I do feel like I can actually get in, and I actually see where I'm helping families and giving them a warm, safe, desirable place to live. So I get to actually see some of the benefits of it all. I think it also just, I think that there's always a learning experience, and I believe that when you have a management company to manage the properties, there's a lot of the day-to-day that you're shielded from, so you would never know all of the details and all of the nuances that go into managing the property. But I think, you know, I'm kind of a control freak type person. Maybe they call it a type A personality, I'm not sure. So for me, I like the hands-on, and I like to remain involved. And that's not to say down the road that I won't decide to use a management company for some portion, or if not all, of my properties. But at the time, this current point, I do enjoy managing them, and I do have certain, I would say, systems or policies or procedures in place that do help for managing. I mean, I don't get, you know, midnight calls or anything like that. I think my tenants are pretty responsible to where if there's not an extreme emergency, they're not going to call me at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Now, let me ask you this. And, you know, this is kind of a personal preference. Everybody's mm-hmm. got their own way, and especially when it comes to self-management. Mm-hmm. You know, of the 20 rental properties that my wife and I own together, mm-hmm. I think I self-manage like one or two of them. And of those two, only one of them know that I'm the actual owner, mm-hmm. and the other one thinks I'm just like the property manager.
Yes.
Do your tenants, do they know that you're the actual owner, or do you put up like a facade as mm-hmm. a property manager? Just because, you know, sometimes there's the thought process that if they know you're the owner, they might try to
take advantage
yes.
in some way.
Yes.
I have absolutely tried both ways. I will say I've tried both ways. I do see the benefit or the pros and cons of each. What tends to happen for me usually when I do show the property and begin the initial process, usually when the tenant first moves in, I try to stay back or stay out of the situation and pretty much almost like you said, pretend that I'm working on behalf of the owner. But it seems that it's always something that takes place, and in some cases, I think it's even been my handyman or my repair guy that's gone out there and said, you know, oh, well, Miss Rounds, you'll have to ask the owner. I mean, so it seems like for me, it's always actually gotten back to the tenant that I am the owner. So I have found that typically that is the case, but it does not cause any problems, or so far it has not caused any.
And actually, you kind of hinted on something that was going to be kind of like my next question, as far as I was going to ask, you know, do you have a repair person, or how you handle repairs? And mm-hmm. being that you self-manage your own mm-hmm. portfolio, you know, typical turnkey companies, they've got hired staff that do all that. How did you find reliable, trustworthy repair contractors to do your maintenance for you?
And that was actually one of the very big benefits from purchasing my first property from another investor who was local here in Memphis who had been in the industry. I was actually able to get quite a few referrals from my, I would say, mentor at that time. So I began to build my repair team off of those referrals. But then over time, I've actually networked and met other, you know, people to help with that process. So yes, by now I definitely have a good team of quality individuals to repair or do the rehabs and things like that. But that takes time, and it does, you do actually find that you go through a few trials and errors working with different teams. But if I ever had to give any advice on that, it would always be to work based on referrals, of course, through our real estate investment group, networking there. There are also other industry type organizations, I think, where you can kind of get referrals. And of course, even just some people use Angie's List or things like that give them information where at least you can see a few reviews on that person's work, quality of work, and their work ethic. So for me, I have not had many problems around that because I always pretty much use my repair man based on a referral first.
Sure. Now, this next question is going to be maybe kind of long-winded, but kind of follow me here, okay?
Okay.
Everybody kind of looks at specific areas of town based on maybe like price range of what you're purchasing them for and what they rent for. People actually out there like to grade neighborhoods on maybe like an A, B, C, D, you know, shall we call it an F type level. I mean, that's got to be pretty bad. I don't know of any like true F neighborhoods, but I know that a lot of the properties that you have, some people make, and you maybe even think this too, but they're predominantly in cheaper areas. Mm-hmm. Some would maybe even call them lower income areas based on just where they're located in town, the type of rent that mm-hmm. they bring in. You know, being a single female who manages her own property, who handles her own maintenance, How did you decide that these were the areas that you were going to own and operate in?
Right. It's typically, I base the decision more on a investment strategy. For me, it wasn't that I felt warm and fuzzy in any of the areas. It was more that the numbers worked. It was relatively easy for me to purchase the properties and rehab them using my own cash. And the return on investment on most of them are probably, I would say, higher than 30%, quite honestly. So for me, the numbers made sense, and they always have. So it works very well for me. And I definitely would never advise any new or intermediate investor to go out and purchase a property in a lower end neighborhood that does not rent. What I was able to find and do proper research and due diligence was that although these are lower income areas, many of them, they definitely have a very good, I would say, demand for rents or for rentals. So I never have a vacancy more than 30 days ever. Usually whenever I'm actually sourcing or looking for a tenant, I have a choice or a few options of people who are actually looking to move right in. So that's my one criteria. I never buy in areas where it looks like it's hard to rent. So if I'm scouting through a neighborhood, even if it's lower end, if I see a lot of for rent signs or a lot of vacant boarded up properties, I try not to buy on those streets, because that tells me for some reason it's difficult to keep tenants there. Usually, even though, like I said, mine are in lower neighborhoods, maybe like you said, what you would consider D neighborhoods. C, some are C, but most are D. Mm-hmm. Even in the D neighborhoods, you can always find a street or a pocket where the houses to the right, to the left, and across the street do tend to be well inhabited, and obviously sometimes there are long-term owners there, and sometimes there are other rentals or other renters around it, but the neighborhood is quite populated, and I feel better about that.
And the thing that I like about all this is that I really kind of feel like maybe you could say you're beating the odds, because, you know, I know a lot of people who have purchased properties that sound very, very similar mm-hmm. to what you own, mm-hmm. and their experience has been the exact opposite of what yours has been, and it's mostly been a lot of out-of-state investors who are using property management companies. And another colleague of mine here who lives locally owns property that's very similar to exactly what your portfolio sounds like. Would you say that you probably have the success that you do solely based on your relationship and the fact that you self-manage these properties?
I would say yes. I would definitely agree with that statement. And for a couple of reasons, I would say the first reason is because I am able to be very hands-on, and I'm able to, I mean, of course, when you're using a property management company, you can vet the tenant or at least look at the application process and see who's going to be selected. But I feel like I'm able to even have more than just a bird's eye view. I'm able to actually personally interview that tenant and find out exactly what their story may be and get a good feel for whether or not they're going to be a long-term tenant and move in. Of course, you're always going to have, you know, a few bad apples, but I would say for the most part, there are certain things that I particularly will look for when I'm looking at a rental application. Of course, it's income. I do believe the standard is what I think four times the tenant must make four times the rent in income. And I think that sometimes property management companies may use that selection criteria, and it just really minimizes the amount of people that they could actually get in. And sometimes with lower income, it's difficult to find someone that makes four times the rent, especially even if, you know, in certain neighborhoods, if they are higher earners, they probably wouldn't be in the D neighborhood. So I try to keep that in mind. That, in addition to, of course, the credit profile, there are certain things you look for in the credit profile. The score, the FICO score may not be phenomenal, but at least if you see that, okay, there are no previous evictions and there are no, you know, problems with paying rent and, you know, having that type of thing on the credit, I think that's what you're looking for more so than, you know, maybe past credit card bills or unsecured debt and things like that. So I try to look at each situation and just select the tenant that I feel would be most likely to be responsible at least for the roof over their head and continue with that. The other thing is I definitely, once I set a rental amount, even as the first year of the lease term may expire, once we go into year two, I try not to do any rental rate increases. I've got some tenants who have been in the property for 3 or 4 years and they've paid the same amount since day one. Because I do think that sometimes that will frustrate the tenant when you continue to raise your rent rates.
Sure.
So I keep those the same. And then other than that, I would say I don't know that there's really any beating the odds. I probably still do have a little bit more turnover than maybe in some of the B neighborhoods. But I will say that as long as you do your due diligence to at least try to get as much information on the tenant as you can before, and then, you know, the human element of trying to look at their situation, even if they're telling you that they may need to pay a little bit after the grace period, but as long as they're getting the fees paid within the month plus late fees or whatever, I do try to keep the human element involved, and I think that has helped me also.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. What's your long-term strategy with your portfolio? Do you plan, like, are these properties, is this kind of your retirement vehicle, or do you have bigger aspirations to, I want to sell them all in 10 years and get into hotels or something like that? I mean, where do you kind of see yourself going with your properties?
I definitely do feel that the current properties that I own, eventually I will sell off some of them. I don't believe that they're all going to be part of my retirement portfolio, but I definitely believe in the merits of owning rental property for retirement, long-term holding. So I would say that my goals would be to double or possibly triple the number that I own within the next 10 years or so. I'd like to do that. And then I'm also, of course, very interested in going back to the dreams that I had in 2006 to, you know, be like Armando and do some flips and some rehabbing and retail, flipping for retail. I do definitely think that there's a viable market for that also. And then, of course, wholesaling. And here in 2014, I've actually started wholesaling as well.
How's it been going?
That's been going pretty well. I would say the summer months were very, very great for me. I would say now that it's died down a little bit here in the fall, I'm just basically trying to keep my marketing strategy and everything consistent so that when things kind of turn early spring, I can pick that back up. But no, I do enjoy that part of the business. But of course, I think I'll always be a rental income cash flow girl for the most part. So, my biggest strategy or my biggest goal would be to, I'd say, hopefully own 30 of the properties. And of course, I want to diversify a little bit and be in some of the B and C neighborhoods, not only D, of course. And eventually, I'd like to sell off maybe some of the D properties. And then by retirement, obviously hold more of the B or C level.
How, based on where you were before, you know, call it circa 2008, mm-hmm. you're just getting started, mm-hmm. you're still working full time, and now here you are, you've been able to step away from the corporate America, you're full time investing, mm-hmm. owner, wholesaler. Mm-hmm. How important has, you know, what it may be the right term, networking or connecting with others in your local market, how important is that, or has it been to your success?
It's vitally important, I would say, definitely for wholesaling. I mean, for wholesaling, it's so based on building the relationships, and it's just very important. But then also, even with the rental, buying and holding business, you get a lot of your leads obviously from your investment groups and networking. Then, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of the leads for contractors and repairmen can come from those relationships. And then another thing that I found to be so important, I think, from the Memphis Investors Group and different educational venues like that, is a lot of the legal ramifications and liability type questions that a landlord may or may not ask or may or may not know to ask. I think that when you network with other people who've done it for years and years and years, they typically have some horror stories, but they have good solutions for how to work through those different issues. And, you know, I think if you talk even to someone like me, where I've been in this business for 6 years, I've probably got a few stories of my own, but then there's some other people who've been in the business for 30 years who can share, and they make my small issues look like, you know, just a drop in the bucket or a drop in the hat. So I definitely think that the mentorship, the camaraderie, and the education is just priceless, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about as far as education, I know that you mentioned that the real estate club mm-hmm. has been critical to your success as far as networking and relationships. Yes. Have you ever spent any money on any, say, courses or guru packages or any bus tours or boot camps? Did you ever get into anything like that? And I ask that because I know that there's a lot of people out there who buy every course, they go to every seminar and boot camp, and they've spent a ton of money, but they've never done anything like that. Have you ever gotten into any of that?
Honestly, no, I haven't. I will say back in, I want to say early 2000s, probably somewhere between 2001 or 2002, there was a real estate mastery course that I believe I did actually sign up for. But that was, like I said, long before 2008. But I purchased that, and it did give me some information. But for me, it's been my education that I've invested, I actually probably prefer just the regular books and things like that that you can just find. And then I think someone like yourself who actually has a course that you can actually prove that they're effectively in the market doing the work and doing the deals, I think that education is more priceless. So for me, I think the national gurus are great. They definitely give you great exposure to everything that's happening in the industry, but my personal preference is to find a local mentor or someone who's in my specific zip codes in my target area, who's doing the work and doing the business every single day. And that's the education that I find to be priceless. So I hope that answers the question.
It more than answers the question. You know, we're getting close to wrapping this up. And what would you say to other women investors out there who are maybe looking for some direction? You know, like I said, there's a lot of single ladies, mm-hmm. a lot of women just in general who are getting more involved in real estate investing these days. And I mean, what would maybe some of your what would be like a word of encouragement that you could offer out to any ladies, not just ladies, just men as well? I mean, what would be a word that you could offer some sort of guidance tip on encouragement?
Well, I would definitely say never underestimate what you're capable of. And like, I do agree that oftentimes the real estate investment industry does seem to be more male focused. I think there are fewer ladies doing the business, but it's definitely not something that's impossible. I think the key is you just have to have, as with any business, you have to have a great team. So if you have a great team of from your sourcing or finding properties, down to your repair people, down to even your property management company, if you decide to go that route. If you build the proper team around you, you will be successful. Of course, you build your confidence by just doing and just getting out there and believing in yourself.
And you know, and like I said, before we, you know, kind of finish this up, I wanted to ask you that. Mm-hmm. When you know, this was probably a question I maybe should have asked at the beginning, but, you know, it just kind of mm-hmm. dawned on me right now. When you were getting started, were there ever points or times that you wanted to quit or give up, or that you were just frustrated because things weren't maybe happening as fast as you had hoped?
Yes, I'm not the most patient person, so there were times when I definitely got frustrated, but never ever did I decide or did I think I would give up, because I felt deep within that this was my passion and just something that I wanted to do. I was willing to take the negative and with the good, or the bad with the good. So I never considered giving up because I knew it worked. I mean, I know you can look back into the 80s and see people like Donald Trump, where if you ever read his story, you'll see that he actually had a period where he lost a lot or had a downfall, but then he was able to rise back above it. And that's really just, I think, sometimes how life is. It gives you lessons and things along the way, but if you believe in yourself, I don't think you give up. You just may get a little frustrated. And sure. So for me, yes, even now I wish things could happen a little bit faster. Of course, it's hard to find that patience. But all in all, I would say, yeah, I've never looked back, and no regrets. I definitely think that this is the best industry to be in, and you do find that you have a lot of control over how far you can go with everything you're doing. I mean, if you want to strive to own 100 houses one day, or, you know, be a multimillionaire, I think it's definitely possible. It's something that we can all just continue to put one foot in front of the other, set many goals, and then over time you will reach them. Just having that team in place and continuing to believe that, you know, beyond it all is a success. So
the last question I have for you, mm-hmm. and then we'll get out of here. Mm-hmm. When you were getting started, obviously your success has come by owning property first, mm-hmm. and now you have just since started getting into wholesaling.
Yes.
Why didn't you do it the other way around? Why didn't you wholesale first and then build a portfolio? And the reason why I ask that, because, you know, I talk to a lot of people at the local club and online and social media platforms and things like that. And the majority that I have found, everybody who wants to get into real estate investing wants to wholesale first so they can build up some cash mm-hmm. to then start buying property. Why did you do it differently from everything that I hear primarily online?
That's a very good question. For me, I think it was twofold. I think initially, I've mentioned the mentor that I met in the industry in 2008. I think that that was probably one of the primary reasons, because my very first investment property had that was presented to me was one that I was able to pretty much, you know, easily get into because of the owner financing and in that position. So it definitely worked out. But beyond that, I want to say that in 2008, there was a lot of uncertainty in the market because of the way the bubble had burst, and there were not a lot of retail sales going on at that time. So I think in 2008, most of the investment gurus and people who had been in the business had already seen that the trend for the next few years was going to be more of a demand for people needing to rent because they were facing foreclosure and obviously unable to buy at that time. So there was just going to be a really hot and heavy demand for people to rent homes. And I will say that over the 6 years, I found that to be very true. There's a high demand for rentals. And I think that, you know, obviously wholesaling is a wonderful tool. It's worked for years and years. But I think for me, I just wanted to make sure that I could get into the market and have something that would really work for me long term. And if your goal is to actually be able to do real estate investing full time, I think that that monthly cash flow offers a source for stability that's incomparable to like wholesaling, because wholesaling can be so volatile. Like I said, in the month of December, you may not have the closings that you would have, let's say, in July or in August. But if you have a good standard portfolio of rental properties, 10 or 20 that are bringing you consistent cash flow, whether it's December or July, you know that you have that to depend on. So for me, I felt that that would be the way to go so that I could eventually move to investing full time. So that was important for me.
Well, Krisha, listen, it's been a great, great interview. I hope you've had some fun.
I have. You know,
I've thrown a lot of questions at you, mm-hmm. a lot of hard-hitting questions, and you know, it's been great to listen to. In closing, do you have a final thought or a word for the listeners?
I would just say that one of the key things for investing in real estate is that there are probably 5 or 6 or possibly even more different strategies that work. I think each individual needs to look at what their personality may be along with what their short and long-term goals are to kind of decide which niche works best for them. And overall, you don't actually have to pigeonhole yourself into one strategy. You can do 2 or 3, which is, like in my case, I'm interested in 2 or 3. So I think it's a personal preference, but it all works. And if anyone tells you real estate investing is dead and it's not real, I would say speak with a guru, speak with someone else, because it is real and it is true. And if you believe in yourself and believe in it, you'll be successful.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you being on the show today, mm-hmm. and we'll have to have you on again.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap up this edition of Investor Talk Radio. Until next time, take care.
This show was produced by Kurt Davis and KurtDavisOnline.com. All rights reserved. To reach Kurt Davis, you can find him on the web at www.KurtDavisOnline.com or email him at Kurt@KurtDavisOnline.com. Everything you heard on this show should not be taken as personal or professional advice. You should conduct your own due diligence. Opinions or comments of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Kurt Davis or KurtDavisOnline.com.